Hello everyone, and welcome to today's teleseminar event with David Ricklin, author of Self-Improvement, the Top 101 Experts That Help Us Improve Our Lives. Today's teleseminar is titled The 10 Commandments of Self-Improvement. My name is Joe, and I'll be leading us through today's seminar with David. David, are you with us?
I am here.
Oh, excellent. Are you ready to get started?
I'm ready and raring to go.
Okay. Can you start by giving us a little background on how did you get started in the whole self-improvement business?
Sure, I'd love to. I always had a passion for self-improvement. I can remember back in high school, I had the opportunity to take an Evelyn Wood speed reading course. This is years ago, and I jumped right in. But my real passion for personal improvement started when I was 23 years old. I took my first Dale Carnegie course. I remember I read the book, I took the course, and I haven't stopped since.
Ah, excellent, David. Dale Carnegie is just an outstanding way to get started. Now, you wrote your own book. Where did you get the idea for your book, Self-Improvement, The Top 101 Experts That Help Us Improve Our Lives?
It's a relatively simple story. I was trying to grow my own self-improvement internet business, specifically our selfgrowth.com website. And I really knew that I needed an extra resource. I needed a place to go to find out information about everybody, all the big experts in the field, what they had to share, all their information. And I searched high and low for it. I went to Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, Borders. I went everywhere, and I couldn't find it. So I finally decided to just write it myself.
That just sounds like a perfect way to create anything. I mean, go out there, look for it, can't find it, create it. Outstanding. Now, let's get started with the meat of today's teleseminar. What's the background behind the Ten Commandments of Self-Improvement?
I started by asking myself the question, what does it really take to change your life? I did a lot of analysis while I was writing the book. I read many books. I attended the seminars. I listened to the tapes. I learned about a wide range of methods, including things like the power of optimism, the power of meditation. Learned about neuro-linguistic programming. I remember I studied biofeedback, affirmations, subliminal learning. Looked into mastermind groups. The list really goes on and on. Then I tried to distill down some of the key pieces that I found repeated by many of the experts.
Outstanding, David. Now, what did you find?
Let me begin by giving you a little background. I came up with some guidelines, what I like to call the pre-commandments of self-improvement. First of all, my belief is that there's no single book, tape, seminar, expert, or system that's going to work equally well for everybody. Different approaches work for different people. And I don't believe that there's a specific master plan for everybody. We're all unique, and we each must have our own plan. And another one of my rules ties into one of my favorite SAT words that I learned back in high school years ago, and that's panacea. And my belief is there is no panacea. And a panacea is a cure-all, something that works for everything, a silver bullet that's going to help all the time. It just doesn't exist. But on the very positive side, I also found that there are many people with good products and information that can help you, but there are also a lot of books and tapes and programs out there that really provide very little benefit. I saw a tremendous amount of material, and I kept thinking, where in the world should someone get started? You know, I started looking for patterns, and I identified 10 that kept coming up, and I wanted to share these 10 and my perspective on them today.
All right, 10 patterns. That makes good sense. Let's jump right in, David.
I like to position each of these like commandments. The way I see it, if Moses was into self-improvement, I think these would be the commandments that he'd bring down from the mountaintop. I know it's a little melodramatic, but it keeps me focused. The first one, and perhaps the most important one, is on taking responsibility. And commandment number one is, thou shalt take responsibility for your life. Dr. Phil had written a book called Life Strategies, and he talked about taking responsibility. He said, and I quote, you create your own experience. Acknowledge and accept responsibility for your life. Almost all of the experts talk about taking responsibility. And they say to stop blaming people, stop blaming others. But I have a slightly different view. I ask myself, am I truly responsible for where I am today? Am I truly, completely responsible? Well, let's think about it. We were raised by our parents. We were taught by our teachers, taught by our friends, the media. I personally watched about 500 hours of Gilligan's Island and Seinfeld in the last 30 years. Didn't these things influence me? And in truth, I believe that all of these things had a tremendous impact on where we are today. But when I think about taking responsibility, the question for me is not who is responsible for our current situation, but who will take responsibility for where you'll be tomorrow? And the answer for each of us has to be, I will. Can we really give up this responsibility? Does anybody else really want it? I don't think so. And I want to share with you one more quote that brings home this point for me. It's from Dennis Waitley, and he's the author of The Psychology of Winning. He said, there are two primary choices in life, to accept conditions as they exist or accept the responsibility for changing them. And personally, I went with the second option. I took responsibility for changing my conditions. Most psychologists will tell you that your behavior is impacted by three factors: genetics, environment, and free will. And we don't have a lot of control over our genetics, and we can't always control our environment, so all that's left is free will. And this free will enables us to take responsibility for our lives.
All right, David, I see. But I also think everyone on the line today knows they're supposed to take responsibility. It's just not always the easiest thing to do. Sometimes it's just much easier to blame circumstances or other people. Now, David, do you have any specific suggestions to help us take responsibility?
I have a few specific suggestions to help everybody in that area. One of the exercises that I use and that I recommend everybody use is starting with a list. Take a few minutes and write down three areas of your life that you're willing to take more responsibility for. And they should be areas that you're very serious about. They could be in your career, family, maybe personal life or social life. Could be fitness or health, maybe intellectual pursuits. And these areas can include your spiritual life, your leisure time maybe, community involvement, or in a financial area. Just about anything. Pick the main areas that you want to take responsibility for. But this is just a start. I know that it's easy to blame your background, your boss, your schooling, politicians, or countless other people on your problems. But until we accept responsibility, we're not going to make progress. And I have a few other specific suggestions to help people take on personal responsibility. I'm a strong believer in the concept of modeling. And by modeling, I mean finding other people who are doing something well and copying or modeling their behavior. So I would recommend that you look around at the people that you know or people you know of and find the most responsible person you know and ask for help or try to model their behavior. Find out what they're doing. Another idea that works well is to take on small projects and see them through to completion. You take on ownership of small projects first and then you build on it. And then you slowly increase the amount of responsibility you take on. And you'll see that the more we prove to ourselves that we can take on responsibility, the better we get at it. We need to really start accepting 100% responsibility for what happens in our life. And know that we have the power to take control of many aspects of our life. Another area is awareness. Awareness is also critical. We need to make an extra effort to be aware when we're blaming others, and this awareness alone will enable us to take greater responsibility. You can even go as far as to note every time you blame somebody else and write it down or at least make a mental note of it. And all of these things will help us move closer to taking personal responsibility.
All right, David, I can see that, sure. I know I can start taking more responsibility, but I'm ready to go on to commandment number two.
Commandment number two is thou shalt take action. I want to get back to Dr. Phil. He says that life rewards action. That's actually one of his life rules. And Tony Robbins liked to say that we should take massive action. One of my favorite quotes comes from Will Rogers, who used to say that even if you're on the right track, you'll get run over if you just sit there. And I have two examples that I want to share with you about taking action. One example is about taking any kind of action, and the other one is more about taking massive action. I'll start with my first example, and these are personal examples. When I was in my early 20s, I wanted to be an entrepreneur. I wanted to start my own business. So what did I do? I started my own business. Unfortunately, it was described, or best described, as a total failure, but it was a great learning experience. And I remember after I decided to shut down the business, I was having difficulty doing literally anything. I watched a lot of television. Then one day, I made a decision to get moving, to do something. And I started making a couple of phone calls to try to set up some interviews. And a few weeks later, I was back on my feet. And all it really took was that first phone call to get started. It was just one simple action that started things off. But sometimes a small action isn't enough. For example, my website has been growing steadily over the last few years. But it really needed something to get things moving. And my business needed something. And that something turned out to be the book, Self-Improvement, the Top 101 Experts. But for me, writing the book took massive action. I think really for anybody, writing a book took massive action. But that's what it took for me.
Ah, David, that sounds inspiring. Now, do you have any specific suggestions for this commandment?
Absolutely. There's another challenge with this action commandment, and probably all of these commandments. Everybody knows that you need to take action to get things done. That's no secret. So we all know it, but most of us don't do it. You know, we all know that we have to exercise regularly to stay in shape, but most of us don't do it. We all know that if we read more, we'll learn more, but we don't do it. We know that we need to take action, but we're not doing it. So the question is, why not? There are a couple of reasons. The first one is fear. Could be fear of failure, fear of rejection, fear of success, just fear. Another reason is plain laziness. You know, sometimes it's easier to just sit and turn on the TV. One more reason is complacency. You can think that life is good enough or adequate, you know, why change and risk it getting worse? And another reason is just bad habits. If we're in the habit of doing nothing, we'll keep doing nothing. And a final reason that people run into is despair. Many people are of the mindset that they've already tried to take action before and it just didn't work. You know, why should they do it now? So we all know we need to take action. What's stopping us? Let's start with the first one, with fear. This seems like a very legitimate reason to stop action. You know, you're afraid. You have fear. When fear is stopping your action, start by asking yourself, what is the worst possible outcome of your action? What do you really fear? Maybe you'll lose your job, or maybe you'll lose the woman of your dreams. Take a hard look at your fear. Is it justified? Is it rational? Can you live with the outcome? And once you understand the worst outcome, try to accept it. Then start looking at the best possible outcomes. What can you really achieve by taking this action? And then ask yourself, does the benefit outweigh the risk? And you'll see the answer is usually yes. Another practical approach is to give yourself a deadline for your action. We all work well with deadlines. For example, you could say, by next Monday night, you're going to update your resume. And then focus on getting it done by that day. Knowledge is also critical. Knowledge and awareness of your strengths and weaknesses brings confidence and helps us overcome our fears. I recommend you take a personal inventory of your strengths and weaknesses. Literally, take a piece of paper, split it in half, strengths and weaknesses, and write them down. Try to better understand yourself. And I also mentioned a number of other things. I talked about laziness, complacency, bad habits, and despair as other enemies of action. I don't have time to cover these completely today, but each of these can be conquered by their opposites. Laziness can be conquered by activity. Complacency can be conquered by a strong desire. Bad habits can be replaced by good habits. And despair can be replaced by hope. And the tools are out there to enable each of us to do that. And as a follow-up to this section, I'm asking everybody on the call to write down one specific action that you're going to take after this call to improve your life. And then take it. If you do nothing else after the call today, at least do this. Just one action, write it down and take it. And I'll leave you with one quote. It's from Dale Carnegie.
He said, "The man who goes farthest is generally the one who is willing to do and dare. The sure thing boat never gets far from the shore."
Oh, great, David. That was a great quote. I know I have my action written down. It didn't take much. Okay, I'm ready for commandment number three.
All right, just a note, these commandments aren't necessarily in priority order, but taking responsibility and action are critical. The number three commandment is, "Thou shalt have desire." I want to start this commandment with a quote from Napoleon Hill. For those of you who don't know who he is, Napoleon Hill wrote the classic Think and Grow Rich. Napoleon Hill said that desire is the starting point of all achievement. I believe this so strongly that I want to say it one more time. Desire is the starting point of all achievement. And I want to share a cute little story that highlights the importance of desire. My cousin Fred and I were discussing marriage and who really runs things. And Fred was passionate about his desires. My cousin Fred turned to me and he said, "Let me tell you, I'm the boss at my house. Why, just last night, there was no hot water, so I raised the roof. Believe me, I got hot water fast." Following a short pause, my cousin Fred turned to me and said, "I hate to wash dishes in cold water, don't you?" You know, my cousin Fred had desire. Mm-hmm. He had desire. And I might be making a joke out of it, but desire is critical for getting things done. And a desire can be anything from a simple want to an inner burning need. The more intense the desire, the more you'll be driven to action.
All right, David, I understand desire, but what if I don't have any desires?
That's a good question. I'm a strong believer that almost every single one of us has desires. Sometimes it's the desire to get something or to stop something. It's at different levels, but we all have them. And I do believe that there are people who are suffering from depression, and depression can depress your desires. And my belief is for anybody suffering from severe depression, I recommend looking into counseling or maybe antidepressants. But for most of us, I think that desire is still with us.
Okay. Now, do you have any suggestions for that, David?
My action step for today is to write down your top three core desires. Sit down and think out what you really want. You can start by asking yourself, you know, what do you want? What do you really want? Do you want to be loved? Do you want to be respected? Do you want to have control of your life? Ask yourself, what are you passionate about? Think about what you love to do. What do you really want to do with your life? What motivates you? What inspires you? What excites you? What drives you? What has given you the most pleasure in the past? You know, a common suggestion is to picture yourself at your funeral. Imagine yourself at your funeral listening to your own eulogy. Think, how do you want to be remembered? And try to focus on identifying your core desire. And a core desire is something you want so badly, it pierces you to the core of your heart. Now that's desire. Now I want to finish this section with one final quote from Muhammad Ali. He said that champions aren't made in the gyms. Champions are made from something they have deep inside, a desire, a dream, a vision.
Oh, David, those are great suggestions. Okay, let's get back to the commandments. What's next?
Commandment number four is, "Thou shalt set goals."
That kind of sounds a little like desire to me, David. How does it differ?
When I talk about desire, I generally refer to something more emotional, a feeling. The more intense, the better. Goals are more specific, tangible directives. There's actually an acronym that people talk about for goals. Goals should be SMART. It's S-M-A-R-T. And that stands for S for specific, M for measurable, A for achievable, R for realistic, and T for time framed. And goals can be made in every area of your life. You can have career or professional goals. You can have income level goals, social, personal goals, spiritual goals. It's endless. And another great quote comes from Maxwell Maltz. Maxwell Maltz is the author of Psycho-Cybernetics. And he said that people who say that life is not worthwhile are really saying that they themselves have no personal goals which are worthwhile. Get yourself a goal worth working for.
and I have some more homework for everybody on the line today. A good place to get started is by writing down your goals. And I recommend doing it in two steps. First, set aside time for a complete brainstorming session that includes information about all of your goals. Just write it down, whatever comes to mind, brainstorm. You can always add to them later. And remember, when you write it down, nothing is too ridiculous. Then pick a few that you have a strong desire for and redefine them as SMART goals. If you remember, SMART stands for specific, measurable, achievable, realistic, and time-framed. And to give you a sense of how SMART goals work, I'll share with you one of my SMART goals. I remember when I first completed my ebook, Self-Improvement, the Top 101 Experts, I set a sales goal for the book. And my goal had to satisfy all of the requirements. I wanted to sell 10,000 copies of my ebook. My complete goal was to sell 10,000 copies of my ebook by the end of the summer. It was specific, 10,000 copies. It was measurable. It's easy to measure. It's a number. And after evaluating other ebooks on the market, I felt it was achievable and realistic. It was also time-framed. I wanted to do it by the end of the summer, and the SMART goal technique actually worked. We just hit the 10,000 mark a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, all right, David, great. But I think there's a bunch of us out here who have goals, but just still don't seem to get them accomplished. Any suggestions for us?
Sure, I have a few ideas that work very well. One is to set up a goals buddy. And that's like a workout buddy. And what you do is you meet with somebody, you meet with one other person, and you set goals, and you hold each other accountable for it. It's hard to break a goal when other people are holding you accountable for it, or at least it's harder to break a goal. Another idea is to develop a mastermind group. A mastermind group, in its simplest description, is a group of people that get together by phone or in person, perhaps weekly or maybe monthly, to help each other with their goals, with their ideas. And they also help holding each other accountable. And they help generate different ideas for their businesses, for their goals, for their life goals. And one idea that ties into goals is to find out your life purpose. Try to figure out what you were put on earth for. If you know that, it's going to drive you towards completion of all of your other goals. And on a more practical level, I suggest that you clearly prioritize your goals. Use a numbering system. Write down what are your number one priorities. Number two, actually literally write down number one, number two to them, and work on your higher priority items first. And above all, maintain awareness of what you're doing. It's important to know the status of your goal so you know what type of progress you're actually making towards it.
All right, David. Yes, I know. Goals, buddy. I've got to get one of those. Okay, but I'm ready for more now. What's commandment number five?
Commandment number five is thou shalt create a plan. One of my favorite old quotes is, if you fail to plan, you plan to fail. I love that quote. Because in truth, you really need a roadmap. Because without a map, you're going to have difficulty getting anywhere. Literally, every single Fortune 500 company has a business plan. They all have a plan. You know, right now, John Kerry and President Bush running for president, and they have one thing in common. I can guarantee that both of them have a plan to become president. And I also have another story about plans. It goes back to my cousin Fred, remember from earlier. My cousin Fred and a good friend of his were hiking through the woods, and they spotted a vicious-looking bear. Fred immediately opened his backpack, pulled out a pair of sneakers, and started putting them on. You know, Fred's friend turned to him and said, "You're crazy. You're never going to be able to outrun that bear." "I don't have to," Fred said. "I only have to outrun you." Fred had a plan.
Yep.
But on a more practical side, your plan should contain several key components. The first is a list of all of the necessary steps involved and a list of all the resources necessary. What do you need to do to get it done? You should ask yourself, what other people can or would be available to help you with your goal? Who's out there that can help? And finally, identify time frames for completions of each of the steps. The more detailed, the better. And your plan should include daily goals, weekly goals, monthly goals. And you should also look at long-range planning. Your life plan should include a one-year plan, 5, 10, and 20-year goals. What do you want to do? And my challenge for everybody in the line is to pick one of your goals and to work on a complete plan to get it done. And remember that the smaller the steps that you have, the more manageable the process. Write it down in as much detail as possible, and don't forget to take action.
Action, yes. I know, David, the planning is just critical. And I've always loved that quote, if you fail to plan, you plan to fail. It's just perfect. Okay, let's continue. What's the next commandment?
Commandment number 6 is, thou shalt pay the price. I'm a strong believer that in order to get something, virtually anything, you need to pay the price. Sometimes the price is monetary, you know, sometimes you need to pay with your time, your energy, but you need to pay the price. A perfect example is this seminar right now. You need to invest an hour of your time or pay the price to get the benefit of this seminar. You need to make an investment in yourself and your future. The goal is always to get back more than you really give in or give up. Vince Lombardi, famous football coach, said that the price of success is hard work, dedication to the job at hand, and the determination that whether we win or lose, we've applied the best of ourselves to the task at hand. And the question that I ask myself and people all the time is, what are you willing to do to get what you want? I'll give you a personal example. I made a decision to watch less television. I gave up a lot of television watching, and it's given me more time for many other things. And my challenge for everybody on the line tonight is to write down one thing that you're willing to give up. And be as specific as possible. It could be chocolate cake for a month. Could be giving up an hour of television a night. Whatever makes sense for you. You might be willing to invest in courses or books on self-improvement. Write down what you're willing to do. And I want to leave everybody with a few examples to think about. If you want to be in great physical shape, you'll need to work out regularly at the gym. If you want to feel well, you're going to need to eat well. If you want certain types of job advancement, you'll need to go back to school. If you want to improve your lung capacity, you're going to need to stop smoking cigarettes. You might need to stop smoking. If you want to meet the man or woman of your dreams, you might need to go on 100 dates to meet somebody. You know, if you want the ideal job, you might have to interview for 50 jobs to get it. You have to pay the price. But in almost all cases, the benefits far outweigh the costs.
All right, David, pay the price. I know I can at least give up some television time each week. All right, let's go on. Let's move on to commandment number 7.
Commandment number 7, thou shalt have persistence. I want to start this commandment out with one of my favorite quotes from Calvin Coolidge. And I remember I actually memorized this quote years ago. And President Coolidge said, nothing in the world can take the place of persistence. Talent will not. Nothing is more common than unsuccessful men with talent. Genius will not. Unrewarded genius is almost a proverb. Education will not. The world is full of educated derelicts. Persistence and determination alone are omnipotent. My main area of persistence, my personal main area, has been, at least of late, my internet business. Remember, I started it over 8 years ago. It was a hobby that my wife and I had. And I built it into a small part-time business and then a larger part-time business, and I eventually was able to go full-time with it over many, many years. But I needed to be persistent. And one of the most famous examples of persistence is Thomas Edison and the light bulb. Thomas Edison literally had 2,000 failed experiments before he got it working. Now that's persistence. People like to say that Thomas Edison failed his way to success. He kept failing until he found out what works. He never gave up. And one of the challenges with persistence is that, once again, we all know it's important. But that doesn't make it any easier. It's frequently easier just to give up. And I have a few tips that I can share with you on persistence. One goes back to the buddy system I mentioned earlier. You can get yourself a buddy and help each other to be more persistent. This person could be your wife, your spouse, your boss, a good friend, anybody who wants to help you achieve your goals. I also mentioned the concept of modeling or copying successful people before. And I would recommend that you find other persistent people and see what and how they're doing it. You know, what they're doing and how they're doing it. You can also write notes or leave signs for yourself to remind you to be persistent. You know, right now, I have a sign in my office I'm looking at that says, stay focused. It's always right across from my eyes, always looking at it. Another technique is to picture the final outcome. What will happen if you're persistent in a particular area of your life? Think about it. What's going to happen? One final suggestion has to do with habits. You need to develop good habits of persistence to replace bad habits. Studies have shown that it takes about 21 days to develop a new habit. So for 21 days, you need to be consciously aware of the change you're trying to make. It's not easy, but once you develop the new habit, you're that much closer to success. My challenge for everybody on the call today is to identify one area of your life that you need to be more persistent in, and then set up some specific goals to be more persistent in that area.
All right, David. Excellent. I know, didn't take me long to figure out my area to be more persistent in, but let's move on. I'm ready for commandment number 8.
Commandment number 8 is, thou shalt believe in yourself. I want to start by sharing another favorite quote of mine from Dennis Waitley. Once again, he's the author of The Psychology of Winning. He said, if you believe you can, you probably can. If you believe you won't, you most assuredly won't. Belief is the ignition switch that gets you off the launching pad. My most powerful example of personal belief goes back to my internet business. I've been working on it for a number of years, and picture this, I had a full-time job, that was a time-consuming full-time job, and I had a time-consuming business on the side. And it was at times it was very tough for me to balance. That plus my relationship with my wife, my first child, and now we have 3 kids. It was very difficult for us. And the main thing that kept me going was my belief in my business and belief in my ability to make it happen. And it helped keep me focused and helped keep me energized. And the important thing about beliefs is that in order for it to work for you, you must get rid of doubts. The more doubts you have, the weaker your faith and conviction in your own beliefs. On the other hand, the stronger your beliefs, the stronger your conviction will be, and the more chances you'll have to succeed. And in order to really build up your beliefs, it's important that you find enough reasons to believe in yourself. Why should you believe in yourself? And I want to leave you with a final quote on beliefs from Tony Robbins. He said that if you develop the absolute sense of certainty that powerful beliefs provide, then you can get yourself to accomplish virtually anything.
How true is that, David? Huh? Okay. Let's move on. Let's go on to commandment number 9, David.
Commandment number 9. Thou shalt learn from thy mistakes. If you're trying different things, certain things are going to go wrong. There's no way around it. If you're not making mistakes, you're not trying enough. You're not stretching yourself. And I have a couple of quotes that I want to share with you. The first one is from Winston Churchill. He said that all men make mistakes, but only wise men learn from their mistakes. You'll notice that many of these commandments are tied back into each other, which is important to note. And one more quote on this area comes from Oprah Winfrey. She says, there are no failures, only lessons to be learned. I think that's a great philosophy from Oprah. There are no failures, only lessons to be learned. And I want to share one of my favorite, learning from my own mistake stories. It's a story I'm going to take you back. Let me take you back to October 1994. And it was after I mentioned the failed business, and I was back on my feet again, working, things were going well. I was enjoying my work, and I was feeling very civic-minded. So I decided to run for city council in the town that I lived in. It was Hoboken, New Jersey. This was years ago. I was young and energized. I remember I was having a good time. At the time, we had 40,000 people living in my town. We had what we called a bedroom community. And what that means is most of the people in town, they work during the day and in offices, generally in New York City. Hoboken was right across the river to New York City. And they came home to sleep at night. It was a bedroom community. And at the time, I loved technology. And I thought I could use it to spread the word about my political campaign to become a city council member. I didn't have a lot of extra time on my hand. And I decided to use an automated phone messaging system. And many of you are probably familiar with this technology now, but it was relatively new 10 years ago. What happened is you recorded your message on the computer, and the computer automatically called people on the phone and then left messages for them on their answering machines. So what ended up happening is I spent countless hours writing and recording the perfect message. And I spent even more time getting everybody's phone number inputted in Hoboken, New Jersey. And I was ready to go. As far as I knew, every single person in Hoboken was going to get a personalized phone call from David Ricklin, future city council member. I love the idea. And it was early one Tuesday morning. I set up my computer to make the phone calls, and I left for work. And all day long, I was excited about the impact that these calls were going to have on my campaign. And I came home that night, and I found out that Murphy came to visit that day. And apparently what happened was that the computer started to run slower and slower during the day. By the time I came home, I was leaving messages for people on their machines that sounded a little bit like this. My name is David Ricklin, and I'm running for city council. Yeah, I remember I turned off the computer and I listened to my voice messages. I have never heard so many angry messages in my life.
Oh, man.
I learned a few new words that night with the blunder that might have caused me the election. Actually, I'm sure it caused me the election. And for those who want to know, I didn't get elected. But my lesson was extremely clear. Check and double-check your technology, because technology can be your best friend, but don't let it get the best of you. My challenge for everybody on the line, everybody listening to this teleseminar, is to try to learn from their mistakes. And don't forget that it's also important to learn from other people's mistakes, especially mine. And I have a few ideas for everybody on the line today to help you learn from your mistakes. And I want everybody to ask yourself a few questions. The first thing is to ask yourself, do you find yourself avoiding situations for fear that you might make mistakes? And think, has this behavior occurred before? Think back, when was the last time it happened? Ask yourself, what activities do you avoid? What activities are you least likely to avoid? And think about what distinguishes these two type of activities. And now think back, what is one of the worst mistakes that you've made? And think, what happened after you made that mistake? What can you learn from it? And when you come to terms with these questions, ask yourself, what have you learned, and how could you change your future?
All right, David, definitely ready to learn from my mistakes. There's a bunch of them that I need to look into. Okay, what's next?
The final commandment is number 10. Number 10 is, thou shalt create a clear picture of your future and visualize it. I'm a strong believer in the need to visualize, and the simplest description of visualizing is seeing or picturing your future success. The clearer the picture, the better. And many people promote this technique, and studies in sports have demonstrated the success of it. At the height of his career, golfer Jack Nicklaus always attempted to picture the successful driver putt before attempting it. And I want to share with you a quote on this area, and it comes from Earl Nightingale. He said, picture yourself in your mind's eye as having already achieved this goal. See yourself doing the thing you'll be doing when you've reached your goal. One method of visualization asks you to start at the end. You start with a clear picture of what you want at the end. For example, if you'd like to buy a new car by next fall, you want to start with a picture in your head. And you can go out and get a physical picture from a magazine, or go down to a dealer and get a brochure and cut it out. Cut out the best picture you can find of the exact car, make and model you want, and paste it up in a prominent place where you can see it often. And this is going to help you stimulate your senses and keep you excited, keep you motivated, because this is a target you're trying to shoot for. And try to remember this picture in your mind as often as you can, even literally on a daily basis. And remember that images are the language of the subconscious mind. And this stuff really works.
Wow, David, that's quite a bit of information for the day. Any final words for us?
There's a couple. One thing I want to note is that these Ten Commandments are really designed to enable you to springboard yourself to success. But are these the only commandments? Absolutely not. Can you improve your life without using these? Yes, but it's not easy. And I just want to leave everybody with one message. Whatever the case may be, I want to wish everybody the best of luck and continued success in everything that you do. Thanks for listening.
Thank you, David.